Disability Beat. This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFTA's Board of Directors, Associate Station Manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for a pre-recorded interview with filmmaker Sam Vint and his son Isaac on a short documentary film they made about sled hockey called The Tournament. But first, disability news for the week of February 1st, 2021. Efforts are underway to develop accreditation standards for post-secondary programs across the country serving students with intellectual disabilities. The programs at colleges and universities have increased in recent years to more than 300, but the programs vary in their focus, length, level of campus integration. As a result, families have little on which to judge the quality of different offerings. Now a panel of experts has finalized a set of model standards that could eventually be the basis for accrediting these programs. The plan is the culmination of nearly a decade of work spurred by a requirement in the Federal Higher Education Opportunity Act of 2008. The standards call for post-secondary programs to meet minimum expectations regarding their mission, curriculum, student achievement, faculty, fiscal capacity, and in other areas. Stephanie Smith Lee is chair of the National Coordinating Center Accreditation Workgroup, which is responsible for the model standards. Lee said that several more steps are needed before accreditation might come to fruition. Lee's workgroup is preparing a report to Congress with their recommendations, and a new panel is expected to start work this month to establish a process for using the standards and creating an accreditation organization. In the meantime, Lee said she expects post-secondary programs to start using the model standards to evaluate and improve their offerings. Even if accreditation becomes a reality, programs won't be required to comply, but many are expected to. In a 2019 survey of more than 100 post-secondary programs, program directors, 82% said that if an accreditation process were created, they would be highly likely or likely to participate. The U.S. Department of Education is investigating multiple school districts across the country regarding concerns that districts have failed to provide appropriate services to students with disabilities during the coronavirus pandemic. The agency said that its Office for Civil Rights launched investigations in January looking at the Indiana Department of Education, the Seattle Public Schools, the Los Angeles Unified School District, and the Fairfax County Public Schools in Virginia. Officials said they are examining possible discrimination against students with disabilities by failing to provide them with a free, appropriate public education during the COVID-19 pandemic. According to the Seattle Times, a letter sent to the head of the Seattle Public Schools showed that the investigation of that district emerged because of local news reports that, quote, the district told its special education teachers not to deliver specially designed instruction, end quote, and disallowed them from adapting lessons to each child's needs. The Indianapolis Star reported on a similar letter sent to the Indiana Department of Education, citing reports that parents of students with disabilities had brought multiple complaints to the state about schools forcing kids into one-size-fits-all remote learning rather than programs tailored to their individual needs. The Education Department's Office for Civil Rights often gets involved in situations in response to complaints. However, this time that doesn't appear to be the case. Rather, officials said that the inquiries are directed investigations, meaning that they were initiated by the agency itself. Stories about a girl with autism and a boy who's nonverbal are among the books being honored for portraying the disability experience as part of a prestigious award given alongside the famed Newbery and Caldecott medals. The American Library Association said this week that it has named three winners and four honorees for its annual Schneider Family Book Awards. The awards recognize authors and illustrators for books aimed at each of three age groups, young children, middle grades, and teen. To qualify, stories must, quote, portray the emotional, mental, or physical disability as part of a full life, not as something to be pitied, end quote. The winner in the young children's category is I Talk Like a River, which tells the story of a boy who stutters. Two books received the Young Children's Honor title, Itzhak, A Boy Who Loved the Violin, about violinist Itzhak Perlman, who had a disability. Also honored was All the Way to the Top, How One Girl's Fight for Americans with Disabilities Changed Everything. And that book is about Jennifer Keelan Chaffins, who uses a wheelchair and joined in crawling up the steps of the U.S. Capitol to advocate for disability rights as a child. Chaffins was previously interviewed on this program on July 20th, 2020. In the middle grade grouping for ages 9 to 13, Show Me a Sign won for its story about a young girl who's deaf, who feels comfortable in her community where many others are also deaf, until a scientist starts looking into why. Honored books in this category include Get a Grip, Vivi Cohen, about a girl with autism who wants to be on the baseball team and has a major league pitcher as a pen pal, and When Stars Are Scattered, which features a pair of brothers, one of whom is nonverbal, growing up in a refugee camp. The award in the teen category was given to This Is My Brain to Love, a story of a high school romance that tackles mental illness, race, and other issues. Winners of the Schneider Family Book Awards, which were announced during the American Library Association's virtual ALA midwinter meeting, will receive $5,000 and a framed plaque. And finally, a team from Carnegie Mellon University has received a grant to develop a prototype system for autonomous vehicles that will allow anyone to control most vehicle functions, from summoning the vehicle to their location to controlling the windows and the temperature of the air conditioning from their cell phones. The team, based in CMU's Human-Computer Interaction Institute, was among 10 across the country that received $300,000 grants in January from the U.S. Department of Transportation to continue developing their ideas to make autonomous vehicles more practical for people with disabilities. The grant is part of the DOT's Inclusive Design Challenge, a competitive program to improve mobility for people with disabilities. Three finalists will split $2 million to produce their product. Nick Martellaro and Patrick Carrington, assistant professors at CMU, said their first step was to assemble a team of advocates for people with disabilities to determine what would help them use autonomous vehicles. John Tague, chairman of the Pennsylvania Transportation Alliance, who uses a wheelchair, told them that many people with disabilities can use mobile phones with a regular keyboard, touch screen, voice commands, or braille keyboard, and linking those with autonomous vehicles would be a great benefit. According to Carrington, quote, "We had ideas that we thought might be good, but we really relied on communications with the community to find out what they need. We really let that guide us," end quote. According to Martellaro, quote, "the phone is already," Martellaro said that it quickly became clear that the mobile phone is the community gateway for people with disabilities. The group and designers believe it would be a great benefit if all autonomous vehicles have a common system for communicating with mobile devices. Martellaro also said, quote, "the phone is already something people have and use. How do you leverage that to control an autonomous vehicle? We hope to develop a standard system for all manufacturers," end quote. Student researchers will will start working on the prototype today, according to Sarah Fox, another assistant professor on the development team. The project will be submitted for another round of judging in March 2022. Tague said that it's a real benefit for people with disabilities to be involved with a product from the development stage rather than trying to adapt something that already exists. He said, quote, "A lot of times we don't get to the table until after something has been developed. Here we have a chance to have that input at the beginning," end quote. Fully autonomous vehicles still may be more than 10 years away. But Tague and the developers set a system that allows people with disabilities to operate items like air conditioning or communicate with other riders will be beneficial even before that happens. According to Martellaro, quote, "This grant is great for us. We get to do the work now. Our goal is to get this tested pattern to the point where the car companies say they can build off that and produce a system every vehicle can use," end quote. And that's, excuse me, and that's the news for this week. You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm Vicki. This is Disability Beat, and I have on the phone with me Sam and Isaac Vint. Welcome to the program, gentlemen.
No, thanks for having us.
So, Sam, I'm going to start with you. You are the writer and director. You've done several documentary films, but you did one specifically about a tournament that your son was involved in. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you arrived at this particular topic and, you know, what people should look for when they're viewing this film?
I arrived at this topic because my son plays sledge hockey, or sled hockey as it's known in the U.S. And we had found it was the first sport that he started to play, first team sport he'd been involved in. And when he was four, we went to a tournament. And as you may know, Vicki, is a tournament for sledge hockey is all mostly people with mobility issues.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're there, he's not in the minority anymore. He's in the majority, and he's there for his tournament, and all his buddies are there. And it was such a positive, awesome experience the first time we went. And we were kind of floating home, and my wife just said to me, "I think you need to make a documentary about this."
So first of all, you live in Canada, right? So hockey,
correct,
is like the national sport, is it not?
It's our unofficial national sport.
Unofficial, yeah. National sport. Yeah. So how old is Isaac?
In the documentary, he's 8. Mm-hmm. He's 9 right now and is about to turn 10.
In 2 days.
In 2 days. Well, happy birthday, Isaac.
Thanks.
I was really excited to see your film, and it looked like you are quite the competitor.
Yeah, that's true.
So how long have you been playing sled hockey?
Well, in the documentary, it was my 5th season, but now I've been playing for 6.
Wow, so you've been playing for most of your life then.
Yeah.
Yeah, looks like you have quite a good team. And mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, they're a competitive group, man. They don't hold back at all.
No, that was part of what we wanted to show with the documentary.
Yeah.
That this isn't just to entertain the kids. They take this very seriously, and they're quite competitive.
Yeah, I know. I have a friend who's an adult who plays sled hockey, and he's broken bones, and he has, you know, he's been hurt a few times on his sled, but he keeps on doing it. He loves it.
Yeah, it's a super fun sport.
Yeah.
And one of our players actually got into the Canadian national team, the women's team, Alyssa.
Seriously? Wow, yeah, that's pretty exciting.
yes, Alyssa White from the documentary is now the youngest member of Canada's national sled hockey team.
Mm-hmm. And so, Isaac, you've been around this sport for a little while. What do you think, you know, of your dad's project and this film that he's done about your team?
I'm really excited for, it's already came out, but I'm really excited for it to just spread so everybody knows about sled hockey. And it's a lost word.
Mm-hmm. And what's your hope, Sam, for the film? What is the expectation that you have about how broadly it will be seen, where it will be seen, and how people might be able to access it?
Well, it's available on nfb.ca, the National Film Board of Canada's website,
mm-hmm.
and it's free of charge, and you can watch it anywhere. You can watch it any country in the world, so I think it's going to be seen far and wide, and hopefully a lot of people watch it and gain a better understanding of children with challenges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and speaking of children with challenges, you don't like to use the word disability. Talk a little bit about that.
It seems like it's a bit self-defeating, and for many people, like, especially once you get into the sports world and some of these athletes, like, they're differently abled. They're just, they get around in a different way, but they are incredible athletes, and it's, they have a perfectly fine life. And I don't like to, I just feel like disability is diminishing.
Yeah, and when people see this film, they will realize that if they tried to get in on one of those sleds and play that sport, they would have a heck of a difficult time doing it.
I think there's a couple of things about sled hockey that are pretty amazing. And it's like the first time you get in the sled, you can push yourself and you can probably stay upright and you can have some success. But also, you're not going to be a very good sled hockey player. It's incredibly hard to carry the puck and keep your speed up and complete passes. Like, it's not an easy sport, and it takes some experience. And I think that's part of what we love to show in the documentary is, you know, a lot of the kids have walkers and wheelchairs and have a generally tough time getting around, and like a stair can, you know, ruin your day. And then they get on the ice, it's a whole new world. Now they're super agile and compared, like, when we'll play high school teams of a stand-up hockey and you can just see the role reversal out there. It's incredible. It's great. It's great to watch.
Well, they play teams that don't use sleds. Is that what you said?
Yeah. Well, we play a couple of times a year. We'll play teams that are like a stand-up hockey team, but then we'll get them sleds.
Okay. Yeah.
So we're all down in sleds, and then the kids. And then there's some pretty high-level hockey teams that we've just trounced because it's difficult to play sledge hockey.
Mm-hmm. How often
we destroyed.
What was that, Isaac?
We destroyed St. Paul.
Yeah, local high school here. There's some pretty good hockey players.
So, how many days a week do you practice when it's? Are you in season right now or not? Probably not.
No. Everything's kind of on hold right now.
Yeah.
But we have. You'll have. Looks like we're going to be able to have a summer camp this year, where they go for a five day full day camp, and then we start up again in September.
And how often do you play every week when the season is going?
We usually have one practice a week, and then they'll pick up some other ice time along the way.
Mm-hmm. And qualifying for the tournament, is there just one big tournament in Canada, or is this something that's a regional thing?
Well, that particular tournament is a big tournament in Minnesota, and we just are kind of chief rivals in the team. Both of our programs have developed kind of side by side as the Minnesota Wild sledge hockey team. So that's essentially their tournament. So we went to that, and it's spectacular. But now, like, every year there's more, you know. Like, initially there was one in Fargo, North Dakota, but now there's one near us in Regina, Saskatchewan, and they're starting to pop up a little more here and there.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully the season will happen this next year. But you know, I know you guys are struggling with the COVID-19 pandemic as well. So are you at home and just trying to stay entertained?
Yeah.
Well, it's starting to loosen up here. Uh, we like Manitoba, where I live, is exceptionally low, and so we have high hopes for things returning to normal fairly soon. We're still hoping to have a season in September for sure.
Mm-hmm. How was school for you, Isaac? Did you have to quit early this year?
We had to quit in March, mm-hmm. but we came back for like one day where there's like three people and it's for 1 hour, and like everybody's like wearing masks, but
it's been weird.
It's been confused.
The whole thing is confusing and weird, but what's your hope long term? I mean, you're only 9 right now. Maybe your dad can speak to this a little bit better, but obviously you're a sports guy. You know, you see yourself continuing doing this. Are there other sports that you'd like to try?
Right now I'm sticking to sledge hockey at the moment, but
Well, he plays wheelchair basketball as well.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a pretty competitive sport as well. Mm-hmm. But being active and being an athlete sounds like it's a pretty important thing to you.
Oh, yeah.
Sam, what benefits have you seen for Isaac over the years that he's been playing this sport and for other students? Obviously, it's something that's been really important to your family.
Yeah, we love it. I mean, you know, Sundays, usually when we have practice, when it's a big day around here, and we'll get, my daughter plays on the team as well, and it's just been, you know, obviously it's good to get out and be physical and do all that, but socially, it is, I think, by far the most important part about it. His friends and that group of people, as you can see in the film, are extremely tight and really, like, they're great friends, and those relationships are, I think, what's most important to us.
Yeah. Yeah, sports, you know, sports relationships, teams are really important to a lot of people, and I think that every kid ought to have the opportunity to do it. I'm so glad that you found this, Isaac, because I'm sure it's a lot of fun for you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Sam, you might want to mention, too, you've done some other documentary films as well that people might want to look for. Can you talk a little bit about those, too?
Oh, sure. I think I did one called Alice and Kevin about two Native Canadians who live on a reserve up north. Alice is a mother. Kevin is a son. He has cerebral palsy and doesn't have many services up where he is. So it's kind of about their life up there. I have another one called The Ken Plain Way, which is about Ken Plain, who was formerly the quarterback at the University of Iowa and somehow ended up in Winnipeg and probably the best Canadian Football League player that's ever been.
Hmm.
His wife, incidentally, is from Illinois.
Oh, really? Where in Illinois?
Oh, it's right by the Iowa border. I can't think of the name of the town right now. It's not far from Ames.
Wouldn't be Geneseo, would it?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
First with an H, maybe? I can't remember.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. From Illinois somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay, well, good. What else do we need to know about sled hockey in general? What are, you know, some things that people can look for or things that you would like them to look for when they view this film that you did? Which is, it's 22 minutes long, right? So it's not like a whole evening.
No, it's pretty quick. I think it's just the level of competition and what a great game it is. You know, you see some adapted games don't really work out as well, but sledge hockey has an excellent flow. The rules are almost exactly the same as what we call stand-up hockey. And you can see when we play the practices, like people that are just in the neighborhood also end up watching. We played in between periods at a Winnipeg Jets game, an NHL game. Like, they had a standing ovation. People freaked out. Like, it's when you go see the sport, it's pretty awesome. It's super fun to watch, and it's highly competitive.
Yeah, it's not one of those films that you might watch and expect, you know, because you're watching people who have physical challenges that it might be one of those, you know, inspirational kind of things. It's really, I mean, it may be inspirational to people, but it's just a lot of fun to see this.
Yeah, I think maybe we wanted to show, like, how the kids have fun. And, you know, sometimes they're a bit petty or a bit silly, but they're kids, you know, so we just wanted to paint the picture of what it really was.
Yeah. Now, do they have professional sled hockey teams in Canada as well?
No, there's not professional, but it's like the Olympic level.
Mm-hmm.
There's a senior level and then the Olympics.
And is there sled hockey an Olympic sport as well?
Yes.
Yeah. So is that something, Isaac, you might want to do someday, you think?
Definitely. That's the main goal. And it's not senior, and then national. It's senior, then provincial,
then national.
For the record.
Yeah, so that means practicing extra hard then, right? What position do you play?
I usually play center, but sometimes I play defense too. And
mm-hmm.
Everything but goal, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, goalie's got to be a little bit difficult.
Yes, yeah, I think it's a very hard position to play.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever been hurt playing, Isaac?
Yeah, you got hit by a puck last year. That hurt.
Oh, yes. But I stayed in and got the winning.
<That's great.
laughs> haven't broken anything. That's probably a good thing.
No, a couple of good roots.
Mm-hmm. And your sister plays with you as well, huh?
Yeah.
You get along better on the ice than at home?
Much worse.
Oh, no.
Much worse.
Is she older or younger?
Older, but she plays like younger. Oh.
You better not let her listen to this interview.
Yeah.
You'll be in trouble. Well, I'm really glad that you were able to be on the show to tell me a little bit about your sport. And why don't you give contact information or the website for the film one more time so that people can take a look and check it out.
It's the National Film Board, NFB.
NSB.org.
National Film Board.
Oh, NF. NF as in Film Board. National
right.
Film yeah. Board dot .org.
No, dot .ca.
Okay. NFB dot .ea.
Yep.
Okay, very good. I will put that link on my Disability Beat Facebook page so that people can get to it a little bit more readily. I've got it in some of the paperwork that I printed out from you guys and your story. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much for joining me today. And I look forward to, I actually got about 3/4 of the way through the film before I finish, but I'm going to definitely check out the rest and share it with folks when I can.
Well, thanks for having us on.
Sure. Thank you. That was Sam and Isaac Vint about their film called The Tournament. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week.
Down, gonna stand my ground, and I won't back down.
You are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This hour of programming is brought to you by all of our underwriters, all of our members who support the station on a continuing basis. Over the past months, we have been challenged, as have many organizations around the world here and at home, and we are so grateful for the hours that you listen and for your continued support and belief in our purpose of entertaining, informing, and serving our community. Whether you tune in for the latest news or to unwind with music, you trust us to be part of your day and to curate the information and music that's important to you. If you're willing and able, consider renewing your membership or making a one-time donation to WEFT. Look for our winter appeal letter if you haven't received